Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Linda Sullivan of Cena Secreto.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, rural Mexico, and beer.
Yes, beer as well.
Well, not really. We almost never talk, but today we'll talk about beer. Yeah. Why are we talking about beer today?
Because there's big beer news out in the world.
Yeah, it's kind of old beer news by the time this is actually going to see print, I think.
If you live under a rock, like me, it's new beer news!
There you go. Okay, so this thing happened, right? The thing is, this is so funny. The thing is Bud Light, well, it's not funny, but it's funny. Bud Light, right, had this whole promotion tied to Pride Month that ended up backfiring on them, as I understand it. You know, I'm like twice removed from this, but as I understand it, you had a bunch of people who are anti-trans who boycotted, right? Bud Light, look at you just shaking your head. You can't even verbalize your anger over this.
I get it. That's what right. I have to say.
But I think there was also a whole thing where then Bud Light pulled back way too quickly, like, oh, we're sorry, kind of thing.
Oh, they responded?
Well, I don't think they responded verbally, but they certainly shut down the campaign in a way that then made the whole LGBTQIA plus community step away from them. And as a result, the number one market leader for beer, at least for on-premise sales, or maybe it was off-premise sales, one of the two, is no longer the leader.
Amen. I mean, I think that's a great natural consequence for how that happened.
Okay, sure. Though I heard a very funny story that an event that they were supposed to be poured at, right? Bud Light was like one of the sponsors and it was going to be only their beer plus a couple of other.
Right, they had like exclusive sponsor rights or something.
Yeah. So they were no longer welcome there. And instead, Negro Modelo is going to be poured there as the key beer.
This is future Lou telling past Lou. It is Modelo Especial, not Negro Modelo.
But they're still going to have Budweiser there. Like the organizers were like, oh no, Budweiser's fine.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't think they understand that Budweiser also owns Bud Light.
That's Modelo Especial, not Negro Modelo, past Lou. Also, AB InBev, which owns Bud Light and Budweiser, also owns Modelo.
It's very hard to understand. The names aren't at all alike.
Right? Thank you. So anyway, but you know, so that kind of leads into the bigger story, which is Negro Modelo is now the number one beer in the USA, either on-premise or off-premise. I honestly don't remember which, but that's a huge, huge, significant change,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's enormous, and I'm surprised by it. So that means before all this rigmarole, Negro Modelo was kind of second in command?
I guess so,
I was late to that story as well.
Right. You know, so here's another story that I'm guessing you don't know, which is that the number one exporter of beer in the world is a little place we like to call Mexico.
Aw, what a wonderful place.
Yeah.
But that sort of makes sense to me because I thought for sure Corona would have been much higher in sales than Negro Modelo.
I would have thought Coors. I would have thought a lot of things.
Yeah.
But clearly not. And, you know, so what's going on? Well, clearly the guys who own, what's the group that owns Negra Modelo? It's the guys here in Chicago.
Constellation,
right.
No, Constellation just owns the distribution and licensing rights in the U.S. AB InBev owns them. Did you not hear me, Pascal?
Clearly, they've been doing the hard work of marketing.
So what is their, do they have a stance value-wise that played a part in this story? Or was it just Bud Light is out, second in command gets to move up? Do they have an LGBTQ stance?
They just have a stance that they want you to drink their beer.
Well, that seems reasonable, considering.
Which is what they're in the business of.
Right.
But I'll say this, like, we talk a lot about, not even we, if I bring to market a new tequila, and, you know, and hey, Sacred, the nonprofit that I run, has been a huge beneficiary of this. But if I bring to market a new tequila and I go and I talk to the buyers at the liquor stores, to the buyers at the restaurants, what do they ask me, Linda?
Is it delicious?
No.
Is it gonna sell?
No.
What do they ask you?
So what are you doing to support the communities that you're sourcing your tequila from?
Oh, wow. They're really asking that?
Oh, dude. Totally.
Oh, well, props for them.
Well, yes. Yes.
I think that's like, that's very 2023 of them. They're like, sort of woke. I'm surprised.
It's even 2022 of them. No. But, and I agree with that, but they're not asking that question of anything else. I was going to say beer, but certainly not beer. And so, you know, like, I think it's significant that Mexico has the number one selling beer in the USA, right? But I think it's also important to look at what that means to rural Mexico.
Right.
So, you know, But
Negro Modelo, I mean, first of all, if they're owned by somebody so massive, giant, like Constellation, it's not even in the same ballpark, that conversation. That's all corporate.
Well, what do you mean it's not in the same ballpark?
There's nothing. Is there anything coming back to rural Mexico or helping from Constellation Brands?
Well,
I'm skeptical about that.
Well, I think, don't they have a tequila brand too?
I don't know.
Anyway, so, you know, I think the bigger question really for me at least is, what is every company doing to support the communities that the ingredients from those companies come from? Right? Like, I think we need to be asking these questions of everything that we consume. But the point that I think is imperative to bring up here is, we talk about, the water shortage and the agave shortage in rural Mexico. Well, I got news for you. If you look at beer and milk, that's what's really messing up the water systems in Mexico. Right? And Chava and I were on this trip last year, I think it was in September, with our friend Gonzalo, visiting the communities where they make pulque.
Mm-hmm.
And Hidalgo and Tlaxcala, right? And the issue, why are you smiling at me? Did I mispronounce those names?
No, you actually, for you, I think you did okay. I'm just smiling thinking about pulque.
Oh.
We can't get it here. And so whenever I talk about it, I have to, you know, have a little moment of nostalgia.
Oh,
can't drink it till
like
we get
that.
Back.
It's a pulque smile. So we were visiting these communities and these families who were making pulque. And the issue that they have is that pulque is starting to become popular again, but just enough that you've got these larger organizations moving into pulque production, which is undercutting their price, which is making it difficult for them to continue making pulque.
No bueno.
And as a result, like, they're looking for money, and the beer companies come knocking on the door. Knock, knock, knock. That's for you, Roy. Come knocking on the door, and they say to them, hey, how about you just pull those agave out of your ground and you grow barley for us
so we
can make more beer.
Oh, no.
And by the way, we're going to need access to your water.
Right, but it involves a huge influx of money, and so they're tempted to say, okay.
I don't even think it's a huge influx, but it's an influx.
Yeah.
And they're tempted to, and, you know, and you start growing barley. After a few years, my understanding is barley's really hard on soil.
Oh.
And for these communities that are used to just one, you know, this agave and the weeds and all that, like, suddenly it's a whole different farming technique. Like, So what's my point? You know, the people, I think my point, Linda, is the people
who... We can
who,
never be sure, Lou.
You can, really can't. Is that you get people who are angry about, oh, like we just did this episode and you're all, oh, additives, additives, it's the devil, right? And I think that's a distraction from real issues. Like, are additives in tequila an issue compared to... converting your land from agaves into barley so that you can export your water? Like, they had a water crisis in Nuevo León last year that was a direct result of industry in that state, but largely beer production.
Yeah, that's a huge touche. I do agree with that, because you gotta, when you're coming from a niche perspective, right? I'm looking at the world even differently from you, though we are both agave enthusiasts. I'm looking at it through this lens of what can I use in my cocktails? What can I educate people on? But I'm still being educated on the agriculture end and the farming end. One of the things I share constantly is the monocarpic nature of agave. Barley, all the grain, sugar cane, it all grows back every year, right?
Right.
But I don't necessarily even, I couldn't wax eloquent on what it does to the soil, like you're alluding to.
Right.
I just know, I think it's so beautiful and cool how long that agave sits and takes in the world before you make something out of it. So I think that's a good point. To me, that opens up the point of how responsible do we need to be as consumers, as makers, as educators of the rest of that process, right? Those earlier bits of the process and how they affect the land and the people that are involved.
You know, I think that's a piece of it. And I don't want to suggest, have you seen The Good Place?
I have
the TV
not.
Show?
No.
I love that TV show. I don't like. I can't explain why it's important in this conversation without spoiling it. But if this conversation fascinates you, go watch The Good Place.
Okay, noted.
Yeah, and make it through season one, because you won't understand the series until the last episode of season one. But you know what I will say is, I think it's very easy for us to be judgmental and almost in a proselytizing way, mm-hmm. right? Like the people who are going up and down, banging the drum about these additives, right? Well, my takeaway from this specific fact, right, about the beer, really, and the milk, to be fair, causing such havoc on the environment in Mexico, is don't be super harsh about any one thing, because I guarantee you, even as I'm sitting here talking about the beer and talking about the milk and how that's affecting the agriculture and how it's affecting the water supply, there's something else that's even worse, which means once you start banging the drum about that one thing, I think you kind of lose sight of everything.
This is the Lou sermon, 400 decisions.
Wow. Thank you. I never even thought of that way. But
it really is. I share that with people all the time, because I do think we need the reminder. Zoom out a little bit and realize that the one thing that's getting you all juiced up, it's only one thing of the big picture. So I agree with that. But I think we're talking at a fairly nerdy level about this barley replacing the agave and the soil I think, and my mind is, as a former high school teacher, is always sort of pointed in the education direction. I think that 1% maybe of guests, for example, at my event, know anything about how the barley, the agave, the beer is happening. So I think the education piece is crucial there. People have got to know that this stuff is happening so that they can care about it. And I don't know what the solution to that is, but in my tiny little niche of the world, that's where I try to say, here, let me tell you something cool about this category.
God, I'm going to pull it back to the additives, because you that 1%. Right? The 1% is the maximum, right, of additives that you can put in the tequila.
You're right.
But that 1% can have such a huge effect.
Mm.
And I say that to say, you're not wrong. Like, maybe 1% of the people that we talk with actually, and I wouldn't claim to know everything about mezcal, right?
Me neither.
The more I learn, the more I realize I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the people who have scratched the surface and get it, it's like maybe the 1%. But to your point, that 1% can really change the flavor of how we move forward. And so there's a huge responsibility when you're part of that group.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that, I mean, that's why we have conversations like this, right? When you asked, hey, come talk about some of these topics, I was like, yes, because these are the conversations we should be having.
Yeah. So, okay, I think, is that a conclusion?
Give me Chava a pulque smile. Give me a pulque smile. Okay, now we can conclude.
I was just in Nueva León. I was just in Nueva León a few weeks ago with my friends Adriana and Diego, and we visited Jorge Torres, who he doesn't use water in his fermentation. He adds pulque, seven to eight day old pulque instead of water.
Is the final product fairly funky?
Oh my God. It smells just this side of garbage in a beautiful way.
Oh, lovely.
I know. And it, like the taste, it's like, it's so much of these spirits, like it's, you'll have a sip and then the next sip tastes different and the next, right?
I love that layering.
I've never experienced something that to my palate was so layered and had such an evolutionary chain to it as his spirits. They're just remarkable.
That's awesome. I've never heard of anyone using pulque in place of water in addition to.
Right. It's like because a little starter.
Yeah, the pulque is like a little container of fireworks because it's like moving already so fast. It's so quick to ferment. And so I like seeing when people use it, but that's unique. I got to taste some of that.
Yeah. So I'm heading back down in a couple of weeks and I couldn't bring his samples with. They got pulled out of my luggage on the last trip. So I'm going to put them in. I know how that goes for me. But I'm going to put them in glass this time and make sure I get them back. So I'll share some with you.
The CL water bottle trick didn't work for you that go.
Well, not that go.
Oh, shucks.
Every once in a while, I get shut out.
All right. I'll cross my fingers for tasting that in the future.
Okay.
You'll see another pulque smile.
Sounds good, Linda. We'll call this a wrap. Hasta pronto.
Hasta pronto, Lou.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends. And please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.